Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, hour number two. What's going on? Tinky and Tierney coming to you from the Tinky and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Who found a better way to mortgage so you can focus on making your new house home. Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. We appreciate you hanging with us. Obviously, we're all piecing together the days and trying to patch it together and just trying to crawl an inch toward normalcy, at least something that resembles a state of normalcy. I think, unfortunately, we all know that we're probably a long way off from that. So Teak and I are here every day, 3 to 6 Eastern, noon to 3 Pacific, CBS Sports Network, all around the country, our affiliates, Twitter at Teak and Tierney. Give you a little content, keeping it real with what's really going on in the world, what's important, but obviously mixing in some good sports content. And this, to me, I love this. I loved it the other day, and now it just got better. I was getting excited. First of all, if you told me that, if you told me that like Jack Nicklaus at the age of 80 was playing somebody tomorrow when it was televised, I'd be excited. It'd give me anything. I don't care who's on TV, as long as it's live. Doing something, beer pong, it doesn't matter. I don't care. Washers, play, what other game do you play in the backyard? You know what you and I need to do? Can we come up with some sort of a virtual game where we piece together, you and I literally compete against each other, and I record my aspect, not that we need to do baseball, but like you were pitching, so we show your windup, you release the ball, and then boom, like I hit and vice versa. Obviously, when you're pitching, you're thrown to a wall. When I'm pitching, I'm thrown to a wall. I could have Coulthard. We have to do something creative. We have to find a way, like a Tiki and Tierney Olympics when there's nothing going. Can we do this? I'm serious.
Sure we could. We just got to find somebody to edit it all. We could do the video. Video would be easy. The hard part would be putting it all together so it looks like we're not idiots trying to put something together.
How hard could it be?
It would be hard for me, but it wouldn't be hard for somebody, I'm sure.
Somebody that knows what they're doing.
Exactly. Somebody who knows what they're doing could do it and probably, that takes 5-10 minutes. For us, it would take 6 hours.
Oh, God. Well, the other
it'd not
day,
be we, worth it then.
I know. That's true. If it takes that long, forget it. I got more excited, but you were, somewhat intrigued by the notion of Tiger and Phil playing again. Put it on TV and have the money go to charity, et cetera, et cetera. Now, according to a golf.com report, the rematch might take on a team element, namely a partner format, including Tampa Bay Bucks quarterback Tom Brady and his retired buddy and rival Peyton Manning. Both Brady and Manning are avid golfers, and last year Manning played with Woods during the Pro-Am at the Memorial Tournament. The concept would call for Woods to pair with one quarterback while Phil pairs with the other. It looks as if this will happen in Florida, not Vegas, which is where they met a year ago for the $9 million match. It will be an unnamed Florida course. The match will be shown on regular Turner programming with advertiser revenue going to charity as opposed to pay-per-view. The distribution option chosen for the original match, which led to mass refunds, as I said yesterday. The proposed timing would be 2 weeks before any major league gets back to business. The one caveat here, and of course here comes the PGA Tour getting ready to throw a little wet water on this. Cold water, because water's wet, not wet water, cold water. The PGA Tour insisted and issued a statement on Tuesday stating, quote, "Discussions along these lines have been going on for quite some time But nothing has been approved by the tour.
Yeah, and to that point, the PGA has to approve all of these things because the PGA sanctions and controls all player media and television rights. So they can't stop them from going out and playing, you know, around the four of them at some golf course and, you know, putting it on social media. But probably couldn't even put it on social media. But they can't put it on television because the PGA controls the players' television rights, which is something I don't think I knew. I mean, I guess I could have surmised that, but I don't think I knew that explicitly.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that the PGA Tour controls, you know, where Tiger plays or what's on TV when Tiger plays, which is why a lot of these guys, if they want to go, you know, play on a different tour, like in Europe, and they have their PGA card, they have to get permission from the PGA in order to go play. So
boy,
it's
they
cool.
Own them.
Exactly. So as cool as this sounds, it sounds like the PGA has the ultimate say. And obviously they're being smart. They don't want to appear flippant in the face of this coronavirus a pandemic. But this seems like it would be relatively straightforward. I mean, maybe I'm discounting the camera crews and all that, you know, all that work that would need to be set up because you couldn't have handhelds. You just wouldn't get the right shots. You know what I mean? And so you'd have to have a pretty extensive setups to get this thing shot correctly for television. And then in those situations, do you put more people at risk? Because it's not going to be 10 people. It's probably going to be, you know, 100 people. They'd have to get together to put.
I don't think it's
got to
be that. Why would it be that much?
Think of the crews. I mean,
I think it's easy.
Think about being on a. You did Man vs. Bear for the Discovery Channel. Mm-hmm. Like, think of how many people were there. You know what I mean? Whether it was the grips or whether it was the lighting guys or the engineers, the cameramen. It was just a ton of people.
There was about 100 people for that.
It's just a ton. When you do anything that goes on television and it's good quality television, and I'm assuming that's what they would be going for.
But we don't care. It doesn't have to be good. Just
I know it doesn't, but I mean, I can imagine if Turner is putting this on TV and they're talking about Charles Barkley being like one of the commentator of this thing, they're going to want it to be high quality because this is replacing live sporting. So it could get a little bit dicey given the amount of people. Not the players, not the guys that we're gonna see, but the people surrounding it. It might be a little bit daunting to get that all coordinated safely.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I wouldn't worry about, maybe there's some logistical issues that I gloss over. I did say yesterday or maybe Friday when this first came up, I think there's a way to you know, you have Tiger and his caddy, you have Phil and his caddy. Now, obviously, you throw Peyton and Brady in there and their caddy. So right away, you go from, you know, two golfers to four golfers to eight people within a relative proximity, chipping around the green, wedge shots 100 yards in. You know, I would imagine Brady, he's got to bang it, you know, 290. It's not like Brady's hitting a 240 off the tee. You know he's crushing it, so it's not like he's going to be laid back behind the pros, and same with Peyton. They might be a little left and right, but they still have the distance. So everybody will be in a similar space. But, you know, I brought up, you know, the notion of, like, jib cameras and where you can have floating cameras. I don't know. 100 seems ambitious. I don't know that you need that. But again, you want quality, fine. I'm not worried about the PGA acquiescing because, let's face it, if Tiger Woods comes and says, listen, guys, you have to do this for me. I know you own my rights, but Phil wants it, I want it. And if you don't do it, we're not showing up at any events. And then you have no ratings. So, I mean, they've got the juice card. No matter what.
Ultimately, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, contractually, the PGA Tour owns Tiger and Phil in terms of what they could broadcast. But in terms of practically applying their power, it's the other way around. Now, let me throw this at you. Because if you think it would be a little boring, and I don't, because I would love to see this. I think it would be great. I've got something else for you here. I'm going to spruce it up. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
It's going to sound wacky, but now you're pulling everybody. Because now the intrigue is, well, let's see how good a golfer. And again, Tom Brady was an entourage. You saw him, you know, nut a bunch of balls off the tee. And listen, I don't care if you're a 25 handicapper or a 2. If you play the game of golf, you see somebody swing once, you're like, all right, this person can play or they can't. Tom Brady can flat out play. He was striping it. So I know that Tom Brady's going to be good at golf, but still, there's intrigue. Can he score on a course that has professional conditions? Same with Peyton. But I want to see what Phil and Tiger can do in their world, football. So here's what I propose. On every tee box, all right, You've got, so let's say the first hole is, we'll go 411 yard par four, little doggy left. Boom. You got the first setup, right? After you, from the tee box forward, you've got an outline, like a 50 yard outline, like a football field. And you actually draw it into the turf with where you spray paint it in professionally. And Tiger and Phil, after each tee shot, do a football competition. The first one is, all right, let's see who could throw it the farthest. Go ahead. Yeah. Well, Tiger Woods, 37 yards on a fly.
Oh, so you get like real creative here.
Here comes Phil, 41 yards. Mickelson gets that one. Maybe the next one, there's actually a target where 15-yard, like a replicate a 15-yard crossing route where they actually have to hit a target. The next one, you got to kick it. I mean, all throughout the golf course, you actually introduce football challenges to Tiger and Phil while Peyton and Brady are wrestling with golf.
That would be more interesting, but Tiger Woods would destroy Phil Mickelson.
No way. I don't think so.
Tiger's an athlete,
so
man.
So is Phil.
I know he is, but Tiger, granted, Tiger's got a ton of injuries. Yep. I mean, I don't know if Tiger can even like wrench and throw a football. I guess he probably can if he can swing a golf club, but still. Who knows? I mean, they're going to have to get creative because the last time that they did this, it was kind of duddish. So they need to enhance it a little bit more, which is why there are these conversations with Tiger and Phil, along with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. So, I mean, look, I get it. At the end of the day, it's going to be all about execution. If you execute it poorly, it's going to be poorly received. If you execute it well, then people will enjoy it. And honestly, it doesn't have to be great. It just has to be not stupid.
I think it just has to be there at this point. I have another solution for you. Preemptively, I'll address this for him, because one of the issues with when you have an event like a specialized event like this with only two golfers, or in this case, four, much like, and they had this in the early 2000s when this is where the origin of Tiger's, I mean, disdain's a little strong, and maybe golfing contempt for Sergio, where it evolved when Sergio beat him and I think it was maybe Sergio and Annika or Tiger and Annika, however the teams were arranged. Sergio won, and it was maybe a Monday night on ABC, and they had all sorts of lights on this course in somewhere in California. And I think Tiger thought that Sergio was a little bit of a poor sport, and then Tiger took great pleasure in beating the crap out of him whenever he could, which was pretty much always. The point being, when you have something like this, the worst type of TV is non-action. So let's say, here we are at golf, at Country Club X. I'm Charles Barkley. It would sound nothing like that. Charles Barkley here is Tom Brady and Peyton Manning are set to test their golfing chops against two of the greatest of all time. And then they all hit their balls, and then they're just walking to their balls, and you got, you know, Peyton yucking it up. Hey, Tom, remember that time I threw that 37-yard out? And they're just talking nonsense. Nobody wants that. So what you do is, when they hit the shots, that's when you do the football competition. When you come back from break, you edit it, and while they're walking to their shot, it's 30 seconds of seeing Tiger and Phil do some football-related activity.
So you got to make it like somewhat athletic.
Yes.
Right? So otherwise, it's just not interesting. And the way that golf gets around that is by there's so many players on the course that you can cut to different things or different things that have happened in a regular, on a traditional golf broadcast. There's so many things to cut to. But when it's just two guys and you're just walking and there's not, and they can't really be close to each other, and you, because of the 6 foot social distancing protocols, and it would get boring without action. So you have to find a way to get action.
That's what I'm saying. And listen, there's no way they would ever go for this. I'm obviously smiling when I say this, but how awesome would it be if on each tee box, right? You know, you've got that little thing with the tees, you know, the ball washer, maybe a little place to rest the clubs. You have a bottle of something, and you have a joint, or you have a vape. Nice. And they play 18 holes, and they're drunk, and they're high.
That would be out of control.
It would be the best thing ever.
It's like the marathon in France where they goes through Bordeaux. You have to have a glass of wine like every couple of miles or something. I actually was going to do it. I probably will at some point. But, you know, you're just shot by the end of it. Most people don't even finish it. Can you imagine? These guys wouldn't. I guess they might be used to it because they probably have had rounds where they just drink.
Well, they finish it. Think about some of the rounds you and I have had, I mean, over the years.
Yeah, but
we finish.
Yeah, but usually I'm sitting in the cart. Just like, all right, I'm driving. I'm good. Leave it out there.
I'm not driving every time.
I'll hit the tee shot. That's terrible. That's in the woods. You know, I forget it.
I do that.
I'll drive the cart.
Oh wait, so you actually will stop playing?
Oh yeah. I don't love golf like that at all. So if I just don't have it, and I know when I don't have it.
Oh yeah, me too.
I pull the plug quick.
Really?
Yeah, man.
No, I'm the opposite. As long as there's nobody behind me. Obviously, you can't do this if people are behind you. But I'm the kind of guy who, and I won't do it where it intercepts my friends or my playing partners. Oh, and I wouldn't do this with people I don't know. For it would only be my best friends because they know I'm nuts. But like as long as I'm not invading or intercepting their momentum. Like if I'm on the complete opposite end of the fairway and they're in decent shape and I know if I drop two or three balls, it's not going to bother anybody and I'm not going to cheat on the score, but I'll just whack a few extra, try to dig it up and find something. No, I'm the opposite. The worse I play, the more I corkscrew myself in trying to get it right. Like I try to fight through it.
Yeah. Think you're going to find it?
It's not that I think I'm going to find it. I pray that I'm going to find, because thinking would imply that there's an element of confidence. There's none. There's no confidence. There's just sheer unmitigated desperation and hope. That's it.
It's like all of us hack golfers.
I guess. How about this? I want to get into this coming up next. I think this is a pretty interesting conversation to be had here. As LeBron chases MJ's shadow, think about a possible canceled season, all right? Could it prevent him from really, if you believe he could become the GOAT and achieve that status, from actually getting there? If there's no more season, which means LeBron's not vying for a championship, which means LeBron's not winning a championship, what does it do to his legacy all time? Tiki and I will get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 1-855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote. Geico.com. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, and we're going to talk with Yetur Gross-Matos coming up, the stud D lineman with an incredible story, one of perseverance overcoming unthinkable and unspeakable personal tragedy. I mean, wow. And we'll talk to him coming up next year. Really interesting story. Hell of a player, first and foremost, first and foremost is the story, but really a good player too. So he'll join us up next. And take this, this is an interesting way to look at LeBron. Now, to me, and I've taken this position definitively now for well over a year or so, it doesn't matter what LeBron James does. He's never going down as the greatest of all time. He's not. Not for me. It doesn't matter what happens the rest of his career. He can win, two championships with the Lakers. He can win one, split, go back to Cleveland, win there. He can say, you know what? I'm going to take on the toughest challenge of them all, try to save the Knicks, go to the Knicks, win a championship. It doesn't matter what he does. To me, LeBron, despite absolutely going down as, possibly the all-time leader in points scored, eventually eclipsing the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's 38,000-plus points, top five ever in assists, and top 15 or so rebounds, PER, all the measurables, the MVPs, the appearances. He's not going to be the GOAT ever, ever. But for those who think he might still have a chance, this is the worst situation for him. He cannot continue to chase, and this was a good he had a real chance to win a championship this year.
Yeah, no, he definitely did, BT. And look, I tend to agree with you that he's never going to be elevated above LeBron James. However, Michael Jordan, LeBron James. But I do think that LeBron is already headed towards and could be the most unique superstar that we've ever seen in the NBA. Now, that's not the GOAT, but it is unique. If he wins a championship in Los Angeles and finds a way to be on the third team and not on a third team where he's just a guy, hanging on, getting that, that extra championship.
You mean like Shaq hanging on with the Suns and the Celtics? Not that they are champion, but yeah.
You know what I mean? He's not like there just to, got my ring. Yeah, it was awesome. I contributed, 10 points a game and, played 18 minutes, right? If he wins another championship being the man in another big location, I think it makes him probably the most unique champion that the NBA has seen. And I'd have to go do research on that, but just in modern terms, like what he's accomplished and how he's lifted franchises, or at least lifted the Cavaliers and now lifted the Lakers out of the melees that they had been in for, you know, 6 or 7 years, I think it's astounding, and it's something to be commended. And we need to kind of stop worrying about him chasing Jordan, because I'm like, BT, I agree with you. He's never going to get there.
No.
Right? He's just, Jordan's in this rarefied air that just, it's him. And part of it's because of the era where when he became a star, like it was one of one. It wasn't like six other stars. It was like Michael Jordan, and that was it. Commercial success and, you know, exposure and movies and songs written about you and the commercials. Like nobody else had all of that. In today's game, there's multiple guys that have all of that, and to some extent. I mean, hell, even Kyrie has a movie where he's what was that movie called?
Hey, I have no idea.
You know, he did. Yeah, he was. You know, why don't you hold my nuts?
I think, I'm thinking. I'm sorry. It was right?
What the heck was the name of that movie?
Uncle Drew.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like,
hold your what? Gotcha.
It's like anybody.
I was thinking him as the lead. That's why.
No. Gotcha. But like anybody can be like commercially and socially huge in today's world. When Michael was playing, there was none. It was just him. You know what I mean? And so you're never going to capture that again. But I do think that LeBron, what he's potentially missing out on this year is not a chance to catch the GOAT, but it's a chance to stamp himself as the most unique superstar that we've ever seen in basketball.
So we're going to come up with a new acronym. He's going to be the MUAT, the most unique of all time.
Exactly.
All right, so we'll grant him that.
Exactly.
Watch, we're so deep into the waters, even though you and I rarely go here, because we don't think there's enough time. And quite frankly, there's been too many losses in the finals on his part where he's going to ever jump over MJ. But there are some people who are still holding on to this, and that's fine. They'll use like Space Jam 2 bombing at the box office, or being inferior, inferior cinematography than the original Space Jam. And they'll incorporate that into the conversation, you know?
Yeah.
and I'll tell you something else. This is not going to do him any favors. The timing is not good. The 10-part documentary illuminating MJ's greatness, never lost a finals, never got to a game 7 in an NBA finals. That's dropping really soon. And that's just another reminder. Oh, that's right. For those who maybe didn't see MJ in real time, or who maybe have been a little bit blurred by the recency bias, they're like, that's right. He did used to do that. No, LeBron, you're number two. You're back to number two. I do want to point this out for him, because I think this is interesting. This has nothing to do with the GOAT, but this just speaks to really how diverse his talents are. And I said before, he's got a chance, and he's not a chance. I mean, it's just a matter of when and where he resides when it's all said and done. He's going to vault into the top 5 assists all time, right? Eventually. Now, that means, first of all, right now, he already has a couple of thousand assists more than Nate Archibald, okay? Who was one of the great little point guards of all time. He's got well over 1,000, much more than Tony Parker and Bob Cousy and Maurice Cheeks, who was on that great Sixers team of 83, title team. He's got more assists than Andre Miller, who played forever, and Gary Payton and Isaiah Thomas. Right now, he has, this will blow your mind, 400 fewer assists than Chris Paul.
Wow. It was a point guard for his whole career.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. No, I mean, look, that, and again, it's another tick in this unique column, because he's whatever he sets his mind to be dominant at, it seems like he can be dominant at it individually. I mean, of course, not team-wise, because there's so many other factors that play into winning as a team, but individually, he's done some spectacular things with his career. And then if you do glom on to the other stuff, the shop that it's becoming, you know, such an influential part of the sports media landscape, and then who knows what happens with the movies and then the I Promise School in Cleveland, like all of the things that he's ever done. None of it is negative, right? The only negative thing is you left the Cleveland Cavaliers high and dry and on national television, and it just was poorly received. But that even was for good because it raised money, a ton of money for charity, which we always bring up. Mm. Like there's no negativity here. He's got a great family.
Yeah.
He's like an uber, maybe a slash obnoxious dad to his son, but you can't fault the guy for that, right? So LeBron has done everything right except for be able to pass Michael Jordan as the GOAT. But I almost think it doesn't matter at this point because he's so unique and he's so different. I don't know if Jordan could even attempt to do all the other things that LeBron has done, talking about off the court, that is.
Teak, he's going to catch Steve Nash. I mean, where he is right now. So if the season, let's see. All right, he's not going to catch Chris Paul this year. He'll catch Chris Paul next year, and he'll catch Oscar Robertson next year as well, assuming health. Magic is number five, all right? He'll eventually catch Magic. Mark Jackson's number four. He'll catch Mark. Steve Nash is number three. He'll catch him. Because Steve Nash only has one more than Mark Jackson. So then you get to the Jason Kidd and to the John Stockton, 2-1. You know, Stockton's got over 15,000. That's not going to happen. I don't think he catches Jason Kidd either. But there is a really reasonable chance that LeBron James finishes number three all-time in assists. Let that marinate.
It's crazy.
In assists.
It's kind of awesome. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, and listen, you can, and probably on some level you should contextualize, well, more possessions per game and the scoring has gone up and, you know, the more points you score, somebody's got to hand out more assists. And blah. Yes, there's always reasons for achievement, or at least explanations or context for sure. But again, if he finishes third, you know, that's really all the context that matters, because there's nothing he doesn't do well. But I don't care what happens this year, win it, lose it, get back next year, go back to back. It's always MJ. It's always MJ. Like, what would you have to do to surpass Michael Jordan?
You couldn't.
I guess you can't.
You just can't because of the success, especially in the postseason. It's just in the perceptual side, you can't ever. I think there's a mystery to Michael Jordan, which is why it's going to be so interesting to watch this 10-piece documentary. I hope they get deeper into him and the behind the scenes.
I think they will, Teak.
I hope so. You can't catch Mike. You can't catch the aura of Michael.
No.
I mean, he could do something really unique, as we keep talking about. Win another title here, win a title in a different city. So it's, you know, three or four different cities that he's won titles.
Mm-hmm.
But perceptually, it's not attainable.
Well, same page. All right, T, coming up, Penn State, the Nittany Lions, rising from the ashes, and their star defensive end, terrific player, high draft pick, incredibly painful story to get into, but he has persevered. That is Yetur Gross-Matos. We'll get to him coming up next. Hour two rolls on. We got you. Teak and Tierney, hang in there. CBS Sports Radio. Okay, NCAA Tournament Rewind continues all this week on CBS Sports Network. Relive some of the best moments from March Madness on the 24-hour home of CBS, getting our hoops fixed there. And who knows? I mean, Penn State was having a good year in the Big Ten. Penn State basketball has rebounded nicely. Penn State football is pretty much back where we're accustomed it to being. And Teak, we're joined by one of their defensive stars. He's got an incredible story, getting ready for the draft, and an image of perseverance, and it really is touching. His name is Yetur Gross-Matos, and he's with us, defensive star, getting ready for the draft. Yetur, Teak, and Tierney, how you doing today, man? What's going on?
Doing great over here in quarantine. Hope you guys are doing well.
Yeah. We're hanging in, man. It really, I'll tell you, you know, for those who aren't familiar with your story, your dad drowned at the age of two when he was trying to help you. And then your brother, and I'm not sure, I know it was on a baseball field. I don't know if it was actually during a game or practice, but he was hit by lightning, and your 12-year-old brother died. First of all, was it actually during a game, or was he just out, you know, in a field and having a little bit of fun? Was that during a game?
My brother had passed away during a game.
Oh, man.
During a Little League baseball game. they had caught a rain delay, and he was out there playing catch and ended up getting struck by lightning in a freak accident.
Oh, my God. Now, I mean, listen, you have just climbed from the depths of despair, unspeakable personal tragedy. Now, I've watched a lot of your clips. First of all, we've all watched you play, but I've watched a lot of your clips when you've talked about how you process all this. For the audience that might not know, how do you summon the human spirit to trudge forward and do what you've done after so many things that just should never happen to anybody? How do you do that?
I think relying on your family and just having a good network of people around you is like the biggest thing for me. I had a lot of people who were supportive of me, and just using what happened in my childhood, you know, as fuel. I mean, there's one way of looking at it, as a tragedy and, you know, something that a reason to stop. And there's another way of, you know, just taking advantage of your time, because you know, time's not promised. Just having that kind of mindset and that kind of energy, you know, I felt like that kind of gave me power and gave me a way to change the way I was looking at things, change the way I saw my life and the opportunities I had in front of me.
Yetur, how important were your coaches then over the years, both in high school and certainly Coach Franklin at Penn State? How important were they in your life? I mean, I grew up without my father. We didn't have a relationship until I was significantly older. And so in some ways, my coaches were like my father figures. You know, how important were they in your life?
Yeah, you know, I've actually gotten extremely, extremely fortunate, you know, to have the certain coaches that I did, even in high school. I mean, I still talk to those guys. Those guys are like a part of my family. And then coaches was the biggest reason why I ended up going to Penn State, you know, just throughout the whole recruiting process. You know, I wanted to go somewhere and play for that place that felt genuine and people really cared. And Coach Pry, Franklin, Spence, they were there all 3 years I was there. And, you know, they've been like an extension of my family.
Yeah, you know, Yetur, I did my first game, really went to first game ever in Happy Valley. The whiteout game I was at this year, calling it for Compass Media against Michigan. And it really is as insular as it sounds or as is promoted to be. It's like this community stuck in the mountains and there's nothing else around it. You know, in some ways it's comforting. Did you find comfort there? Because I think a lot of people view Penn State differently because of everything that happened, you know, a decade and a half ago. But it's really like this insular place, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's extremely accurate. And, you know, everybody kind of circles around that saying we are. And, you know, I think a lot of people there actually really buy into it. And it's like its own little community in the middle of nowhere. And you know, people can't just infiltrate that. So, I mean, that place is just like a community of its own and a family, you know, that'll last a lifetime.
Yeah. So we're talking to Yetur Gross-Matos. He's with us here on Tiki and Tierney, Penn State defensive lineman. So, you know, you're not alone. You know, all the draft prospects we have and all the student athletes and I mean, nobody's on campus. So when did you actually leave Penn State's campus? I mean, if you're a college student right now, because Tiki and I have kids and we talk about what it's like on a day-to-day basis for us, you know, waking up and trying to maintain some sort of academic curriculum and keep some structure. For a college student, I mean, obviously you're juggling two things, football and academics, but day to day, what is your world like right now?
Right now, waking up, you know, I think having a structure and a schedule is, you know, obviously important, especially in a time like right now where you don't really know what the future holds. So waking up every day, eating my mom's food.
Be careful.
And just working out, staying in shape the best I can. And outside of that, you know, just talking football with coaches and you know, that takes up a lot of my time and just cherishing the time I have at home with my family.
Well, yeah, that's what I just wanted to follow up on that, T, because we talk about how the draft process is playing out here. So have you Skyped with coaches, position coaches, head coaches, GMs? How much interaction, you don't have to name the teams, but how much interaction have you actually had with NFL teams at home?
Yeah, I've had a ton. I think I probably have met with about 15 different teams so far, whether it's been phone calls like this or FaceTime, Zoom, some app I never heard of, web Skype thing. I mean, it's just been been a lot different than what I expected, but it's been great.
Yeah, you know, Ettore, you've only had the interaction, personal interaction with the coaches at the combine where you get measured, and it's, I mean, talk about impersonal. It's crazy. It's like a factory that you have to go through. But I wonder what the conversations are like, because you are so unique. I mean, you can play anywhere, and Penn State used you that way last year, from, you know, pushing you down in the nose tackle, you know, five technique. Sometimes you're on the outside rushing a pass. You had 9.5 sacks last year. Like, when you're talking to NFL coaches, really D-line coaches or defensive coordinators, are they asking you about your versatility? Because I think it could be a great asset, even if some people would consider you a tweener in some regards.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are some teams that see me playing the edge position versus playing the three technique inside. And, you know, other teams see me as an outside linebacker. So, and I think I have, at this point in my career, I got that versatility to play wherever they need me to play the defense. So I feel confident about that. And I think teams realize that too.
What do you think your biggest skill is? Like, when you get to wherever you're going to be as a rookie, and you're trying to, I don't know, gain an edge or gain playing time or gain the eye of the coordinator, the defensive line or linebacker coach, what's going to be your big advantage? Like, what are you best at?
I think teams are automatically going to realize just the kind of worker I am. I feel like I've been out competing people, not working people my entire career. And I know that's not going to change, and it's going to just be that much more important when I get to the next level. So I think that's going to be the thing that separates me the most.
You know, Ettore, one thing that I don't think the average fan processes, because they just, and I get it, hey, you know, so-and-so is getting ready to get drafted, become a professional athlete, sign their name, get millions, get endorsements, play in front of 80,000 people, blah, blah, blah. But from your point of view, there's so much that you have to juggle in your mind. You don't know if you're going to be in California. You don't know if you're going to be in Colorado, if you're going to be in New Jersey playing for the Jets or the Giants, in Baltimore. You could be anywhere, Texas playing for Dallas or the Houston Texans. Do you do, not research, but are you immersed in the world of mock drafts to kind of get a sense of, all right, this is kind of where most people think I might go, which means I might go to this team or this city? How do you handle that? Do you try to take a guess where you might wind up?
I don't know. I don't really
be honest.
I don't really watch all the mock drafts as much as I could. But I mean, I think I have a pretty good sense of where this thing is going to end up, and as far as where I'm going to go, you know, I've got no clue. But in terms of the range of where I think I'm going to get picked up, so I mean, I don't know. That's kind of the surreal part for me, is not knowing, like,
who did you grow up being?
A month from now, am I going to be in California or am I going to be in Washington?
It's true.
Who did you grow up a fan as?
I grew up a Giants fan all my life.
Ooh!
Oh, nice, nice. So you have the Michael Strahans and the OCs and that group of guys to influence. So who do you think influences you the most? Like, everybody takes their game from somebody. I wanted to be like Walter Payton, right? Because he did everything for the Chicago Bears back in the day. He was a receiver and as a runner. And when I got into the league and got my chance, that's what I wanted to do, is be good at everything. Who did you take your cues from, at least from a, like an idol standpoint?
I mean, me growing up as a Giants fan, I was, you know, JPP was like my guy. So, and just watching him his whole career. I think more recently, I watch Bradley Chubb a lot, because I think we're similar in terms of our body type and things like that. So those would be the guys I compare myself to.
Well, listen, man, it really is an amazing story. It's you know, it's born out of sadness, but it finishes and punctuates with a great human spirit, great resolve. You're so easy to root for, hell of a player, but really just an incredible young man. So I know that your mom, you mentioned her cooking before. I can only imagine what kind of force and what kind of presence she's been for you. So we all want to wish you well, wish you the best. We'll be watching you on Sundays, but we'll be following you before. Ettore Gross Matos. Nice chatting with you, young man. Really enjoy the process and hang in there, pal.
Good luck to you.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys' time.
No, it's our pleasure. Thank you. You got it. Ettore. Oh, no doubt. You know, the story about you don't want to just keep bombarding the young man with questions about, you know, his mindset when these tragedies occurred. But I couldn't help but thinking, you know, he was two, and the recollection ability of a two-year-old, you know, when you become a grown-up is almost nothing. You don't really remember any, maybe an image or a smattering of an image here and there, but you don't remember much. But I mean, he's got to live his whole life knowing that, you know, his dad died because his dad was trying to save him.
Yeah. No,
that's tough, man.
Yeah, it is. It's very tough. Geez. And then with his brother as well. I mean, you know? I can remember those days, baseball games getting postponed because of weather. And
yeah.
Kids don't. I mean, you just, the likelihood of that happening is, it's so minuscule. You're out throwing in the rain. Doesn't matter. It's like, it's just getting wet, you know, catching the ball back and forth and out of nowhere. But I'm glad he's persevered. He has a great future ahead of him.
Yeah.
And again, I think one of his biggest things, and I ask him, is his versatility. And now, in some ways, some people look at it as a negative for him draft status-wise because he was moved all over the place. He's really a run stopper, right? And so in some regards, you put him inside because he's athletic. You know, he's not Aaron Donald, but he's athletic playing, you know, five techniques or three techniques or being on the nose. That's one thing. But if you can, you make money in the NFL if you can get after the passer, which
exactly.
he started to develop into doing his last two seasons. I think he had 8 sacks 2 years ago and 9.5 last year. So, right, he's not going to really have a choice, but, you know, he might want to lean himself down 5 to 10 pounds and become an edge rusher or a stand-up linebacker as opposed to that three technique, because it's hard to be successful in there. Some people have done it,
yep.
Like Aaron Donald, but it's really hard to be successful in there.
Yeah, and I just popped out a bunch of mocks just to kind of see where the range is. Peter Schrager, who we both like from the NFL Network, Schrags has him 28th to the Ravens. Boy, that would be a great franchise to get drafted to, no doubt. So we shall see. But coming up, nobody knows exactly how much Drew Brees has left in the tank. But did Sean Payton accidentally let it slip out? That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.